How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com. How much money do you lose every time you miss a customer call? With a Buzz CRM, you never have to worry about that again. Their system automatically texts missed calls and engages leads instantly using conversational AI. It turns your missed opportunities into booked appointments automatically. It's a complete game changer for local businesses. Secure your access today for a massive discount at thebuzzcrm.com. That's thebuzzcrm.com.
Welcome to SEO 101, your introductory course on search engine optimization. So, turn on your computers, open your minds, grab your mouse, and get ready to get back to the basics. SEO 101 on webmasterradio.fm. Is now in session.
Hello and welcome to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, episode number 407. This is Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my stand-in co-host is my company's senior SEO, Scott Venak. You having a good day, bud?
I am having a good day. I feel like my brain's a little bit broken today, you know, forgetting things that, you know, like my password that I've been using every day for the past 20 years. Well, that's not true. I change my password more than every 20 years. But, you know, just forgetting things like that today, you know. You go upstairs to get a glass of water and you use the bathroom and you come back down and you don't have a glass of water with you. Getting old.
Exactly. Oh my God. Yeah. I've had one of those days where despite the fact that I still didn't get good sleep, I seem to be getting things in order. So who knows? There's really no rhyme or rhythm.
It's a strange thing, the brain.
All right, well, let's jump into this. It's not going to be the longest show. We've got some interesting stuff, but just it's not super news heavy this week. So first off, you put in here about an update. Schema.org has launched its own schema markup validator tool.
Yes.
So what's this?
Yeah, so anyone that's been using the Google structured data tool probably is aware that Google is discontinuing that tool, which is a shame, and instead advising you to use their rich results test, which is great. The test, that tool, the rich results tool is great. It helps you see how you're doing with your structured markup, but that original structured data tool can also give you a lot of insight and validation of your code. Well, a lot of people were not happy with Google about that. So now this service, it'll be located at validator.schema.org, which if it looks like the old Google tool, it's because it basically is. The service is powered by Google's general infrastructure for working with structured data, and it's been provided to schema.org as a Google-hosted tool. So the tool will not die. It will just live somewhere else.
Weird.
It's great. And, you know, and I had completely forgotten, and I had to Google this, and then I was like, oh, right, that schema.org is actually an initiative started by Google and Microsoft and Yahoo about a decade ago. And I totally knew that. But, you know, when you don't hear about stuff like that, you kind of forget those connections. So,
I never looked it up. I'm sure it's an easy find to discover this, whether or not it's its own little entity that is funded by them, or if it's sort of like a 20% program that all of them sort of invest in time-wise.
Yeah, you see, I looked into it a little bit and I don't know. I don't know the answer to that question. I wanted to know, like I did the Google search, who owns schema.org? I felt like such a newbie searching for that. I was like, I should know this. And I was like, oh, right. But yeah, it didn't really give me a super clear answer. I got the information I wanted, and then I left the Wikipedia page. And I also hate Wikipedia, but I seem to still go there every day. We won't get into Wikipedia. You know, Wikipedia used to be really bad because every one of our clients was basically, I shouldn't say everyone, a lot of our clients were outranked by Wikipedia in a lot of cases. And that doesn't seem to happen as much anymore. So that's good. I don't hate them as much as I used to.
It's less often gamed from what I can tell. Of course, I'm sure the people who game it just laugh at me, but that's from what I've seen.
It does feel that way, doesn't it? There's a bit less black subtle. Hat. Yeah, absolutely.
So for listeners, what is Schema?
So Schema is a behind-the-scenes structured markup that helps search engines to better understand your website in a nutshell.
There you go.
To get more than that would be well beyond 101 level stuff. So it's
yeah,
just...
So yeah, you said it exactly the way I would have said it. I think to make it even plainer, we just add code around code on your website to make it even clearer to Google what it's about. So if you got a postal code, we put a little code around the postal code. Maybe that was the wrong one to use. saying this is a postal code. I mean, it's that simple. It's ridiculous, in fact. But
well, it's
it
even
does
easier.
Clear things up.
It's even easier now with JSON LD because you don't have to wrap every little piece of code with more
yes.
extra code. It just gets easier and easier all the time. So if you're not using it, JSON-LD is a form of structured markup. And I'm trying to think, I don't know if I can think of an example where you don't need it at all. So basically all sites should have it to some degree. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, get it.
There you go.
And schema.org is where you'll learn everything you need to know about that.
Now, I believe you're way more in the trenches than I am. I believe Yoast implements a basic level of that on when you use their plugin, right?
Yoast does quite a bit for it. So if you've got a WordPress website and you've got Yoast configured properly, Yoast can definitely be your friend. Now, it's not always perfect. You may want to not use the Yoast generated stuff and create your own. I guess that's kind of a case by case basis. But if you're, you know, doing your SEO on your own, you don't have any professional help and maybe you don't really understand a lot of behind the scenes stuff. That's a great place to start. And that'll, you know, get you rolling.
And again, trying to rewind here, Yoast, we're talking about Yoast, what the hell is Yoast, right? Yoast is an SEO plugin. So it's a plugin for WordPress that extends the ability of WordPress to provide a little bit of search engine optimization out of the box. It's a great little tool. We had Yoast DeVock, the creator and owner of it, on the show on episode 404. It was great having him on, and it's always revealing and interesting to see what they're up to because they're always on the cutting edge. So it's a great tool. We don't recommend any other plugin for doing SEO. It's simply the best, in my opinion. Right. So schema.org, new tool. Schema is important on your website, but use JSON LD if you can to make things simpler, or just use the Yoast SEO plugin. That's it, all in a nutshell.
Easy. And the validator you can find at validator.schema.org. Just enter in your URL you want to test and that's it. Simple.
Yeah. And all the validator does is make sure you put the code in right. And also whether or not, I guess it'll also help you identify any, I don't know if it does actually issues with whether or not you selected the right categories and stuff. Actually, it probably doesn't, does it? It just shows you whether you got the right syntax.
Yeah. It doesn't really help you with category selection or any of that sort of stuff. It is strictly, you know, if it's what you have there is marked up correctly, if you have any warnings or omissions that they may recommend. So if you have, say you have local business set up and you forget to put your phone number, it'll give you a warning saying a phone number field is recommended, stuff like that. Although I don't know many people would forget their phone number. It's kind of one of the critical ones, but maybe you never know.
It's actually kind of a different error or issue we had the just a couple of days ago, actually, with one of our first.dentist clients. We have another company that does dental marketing that I'm co-owner of. And it, this client, it's Google's bizarre. I just don't understand sometimes what it's thinking, but or how it thinks. In this case, her business is showing up. This is her homepage in rankings. It shows up perfectly well, exactly where we want it to be. But it says next to its search engine result, March 2017. I'm like, what the? March 9th, 2017. So I went to code. I'm like, why is this happening? Google's decided to show, and this comes from JSON LD, actually from the Yoast plugin, which is perfectly natural. It's on every site almost. I mean, you specify these details. It says, when was this first published? It doesn't matter that it's been updated recently. it's showing the first published date instead of the updated date. Usually it doesn't show either. I had no idea why Google's decided to show that. Anyway, it's something we're trying to figure out, but there are good and bad aspects of JSON-LD. I mean, adding that information is just yet another way Google can screw up too.
The screw ups are plentiful. If you start looking for them, there's lots of them out there.
Yeah. I mean, in this case, it doesn't harm her at all. It bothers her, the client. And so we're trying to work on it, but it certainly isn't going to have any negative impact on rankings.
You can have it all. Great pay, awesome benefits, a flexible schedule, the chance to grow. At Cox, we're recruiting auto and diesel technicians to join our Manheim and fleet services teams. If you're ready for a new job and want to experience an award-winning workplace, drive your career forward with us. Visit cox.career/autotech to learn more. That's cox.career/autotech.
All right, so let's jump into Google Search Console. There's an enhancement report for events. What's this all about?
Yeah, so this actually ties in perfectly with the schema.org validator tool. So if you have events on your website, which I don't know what percentage of people that would apply to, it's certainly not as common as other things, but if you have events and you have those events marked up, which you in most cases should, within Google Search Console, there is an enhancement report for events. And this is not new, they've had it for a while. But then I guess it was this week or late last week, Google actually updated that report to display more errors and to change, downgrade some errors from errors to warnings, things like that. So if you log into your Search Console and you see a number of new errors suddenly appearing, don't panic. Those errors have always been there, or maybe panic, I don't know. They're not new errors. It's just Google is now choosing to tell you about them. So you don't have to think that, oh, my site was hacked and everything broke. No, it's as it was. You're not going to get burned because of this unless you already are for whatever reason. Just still, as usual, go in and take a look and fix them. But no need to panic.
Yes. We'll tell you when to panic, but that's no need to panic.
Yeah, you don't have to panic over this one. And I don't know what else to say about this. It's just a small little footnote that you should be aware of if you go into Search Console that there was a change. And that sort of thing happens a lot with the enhancement reports. Google's always tweaking what they're reporting on. And so if you see a big increase in any of the errors ever, I won't say it's never an issue with something going on your website to cause them, but it doesn't necessarily mean something has happened. Google's just trying to be more transparent.
Wow, that's kind of amazing.
It is.
We've got to see more of that.
you know, if we could talk about that, in the past few years, the transparency level at Google has just gone through the roof. Like if I think back to when I started, geez, like 18 years ago, it was just a black box and you never knew anything. There was no feedback or it was completely opaque. So they've definitely done a better job over the past while and are getting better at sharing.
Right. Definitely. Oh yeah. I think they've done an amazing job. There's always going to be the conspiracy factor, but they do a good job of even trying to tackle that. So you mentioned event structured markup. I thought I'd just try to detail a couple things here. So we talked about schema markup. This is what we're talking about here as well. Just happens to be for events. Some of the stuff you would add behind the scenes in JSON-LD, if you had events on the page, would be event status type, particularly useful when an event is canceled or rescheduled. That's where you would specify that. Maximum physical attendee capacity. That's literally one of the things. Maximum virtual attendee capacity, if it's virtual, which is, of course, very important these days during COVID. The event schedule. Director, composer, you know, everything about all this information can be marked up to make it really clear to Google what each piece of data means and how it should be interpreted. So it's very handy and extremely important for anyone with events listed on their pages. Okay, so local SEO news. I was just cursing this whole situation. I love reading up on the latest support requests and stuff on localsearchforum.com. And one of them was someone who found that all of their Google My Business listings were suspended. No response or explanation provided by Google. Obviously, that is worth freaking out about. That's when you panic. And he put together an entire list of, you know, why this is ridiculous. There's absolutely nothing wrong. They followed all the rules. You know, oftentimes Google will suspend Google My Business listings if you truly don't have a physical location or you're trying to game the system. Well, he didn't do that. He shows examples of photos, literally, of each location, their signs, even provides their insurance. I mean, he went all out and still crickets. So Ben, one of the support guys in the forum, said that he thinks this is, you know, if it's he's very vague about it, unfortunately, and I've even posted, I wonder what Ben's talking about, but he said, if it's what I think it is, they're never going to respond. Oh, well, that doesn't help much, but I'm fascinated to find out what it is. He will respond, I'm sure, himself, and follow up, but I would love to know what that is. And really, is there any situation where Google shouldn't say something? I think it's just plain irresponsible. Even if it is spammers, you know, I guess if they've had a history of spamming and you're just like, oh, you again, don't respond, fine. But if it's a person who's never been on the radar before and they're saying, I didn't do anything, you should talk to them. Just say, look, you actually did. If you don't know what it is, here's an article on what it could be. You know, just give them something to diagnose it, and just don't. It's just not good faith. I hate when Google treats people like that.
They're really messing with somebody's livelihood in cases like this, where someone's obviously, well, assumingly, obviously not doing anything wrong.
They don't seem to be attending to. They're being very clear that this is it. This is us. There's nothing about this that's bad. You know, there's that policy that Google's following. If assuming they are, I mean, it must be if they're totally ignoring them, it's irresponsible. I think negligent too. I don't think they should be allowed to not respond to that when it comes to a business's livelihood.
That is good. Like when I read your headline in our show notes, that all I read it as all Google My Business listings were suspended, like all of them ever. And I'm like, how did I miss that?
Yeah, that would be everywhere.
Like, I think I should have heard about that by now. And then when you started talking, I finally went to the link I hadn't looked at. You're like, oh, that's that's better.
I think you need some more sleep.
I do. I'll have an early bedtime.
It's a more local SEO. I titled this 1997 continued. Back in 97, quote unquote, gaming SEO results was a joke. I mean, it was so easy to do. It was just the way it was. It didn't seem like anything was wrong with it because everything was brand new and very easy to get to the top. So it was a lot of fun to start out in marketing then. Anyway, and that is when I started my company in 97. But anyway, I don't know exactly when Google Local started. Was it 2008? I can't remember. But Google My Business kicked off, and it was very it was amazing to us because Google had advanced so much in its algorithms, and it was a lot more difficult to game it, which was great. We kept the spammers out, and we were, you know, the guys like us who were trying to do the right way, the white, quote unquote, white hat way, were able to get some purchase, and we could push out those guys. Unfortunately, it's continued. Good old 97's continued on Google My Business. It's just too damn easy to game. And, you know, we are not doing it. I keep telling my clients, no, we're not going to game it. We're not going to do these bad techniques, because at some point the bad guys are going to get caught and their pants down and they're going to lose everything. I said that for years, and it's so embarrassing that nothing's happened. I'm just embarrassed for Google. Anyways, they still reward local listings who put keywords in their name. It's a business name. And it's just so hard to accept. With all the data they have, you'd think they could do a better job. Anyway, there's a really interesting article. I actually happened to write that, and then I saw this interesting article, and it says the real world impact of keyword stuffing in Google My Business. And it was a really intriguing take on it. The idea was that if everyone started keyword stuffing, for example, I'll actually use the sample they gave me here because it was a good one. If, let's say, tree companies in Raleigh, North Carolina, if they all keyword stuffed their names, their business names, how would you tell them apart? Like Raleigh Tree Service, Raleigh Tree Removal, North Raleigh Tree Service. It's just you don't really have a brand. And they have to actually make that change in their business name to have that stick, because Google is somewhat good enough. About 40% of people who game the results and don't actually have that content in their name will be penalized. They'll either have a soft ban or a hard ban on Google My Business. So it's not worth messing with that. But many people are literally creating business names with these keywords in them. One of them examples is a law group, San Diego Personal Injury Lawyer Mobile Law Group. They've actually made that their business name. Not the worst thing they could do, but that's pretty darn long. And all of a sudden, if everyone does that, it's pointless. I mean, almost wish they would, because then it's back to the old game of being best at what you do, you know, and really truly differentiating yourself. The ranking power is diminishing when everyone does it. And that's the core message here. And it's true.
I have kind of a real world story from my life that's very similar to this, to the Raleigh Tree Service example. A little background: about 15 years ago or so, my wife and I moved back to the Comox Valley. And when we did, we had to stick all our stuff in storage while we looked for a place to live. And my father-in-law booked a storage locker for us. So great. He gave us the keys to the lock and said, it's unit whatever it was at, I think it was Comox Valley Self Storage. So we said, okay, great. So we go to Comox Self Storage. And no, that's the wrong place. And then we went to Comox Valley Mini Storage. And no, that's the wrong place. And then I think we went to three or four different places before we found the correct self-storage location. And it's all because their names, we were like, well, was it Comox Valley? Was it Comox? Was it Courtney? Was it, because Courtney is basically, they're the same city, kind of. I'm not going to get into that. But the names are all so similar, you don't know what's what. And it's the same as this example on Search Engine Land with Raleigh Tree Service, Raleigh Tree Removal, North Raleigh Tree Service. There's probably a North Raleigh Tree Removal as well.
And the other aspect of this they don't cover is the potential fallout of having a name similar to another one. What if that other company is doing really bad business? You could get the negative reviews on your Google My Business listing. It happens all the time.
That's true. And it does the exact opposite too. What if you're doing awesome business and people are going to the competitor because they think they're you?
Yeah. Yeah. It is a very dangerous path to follow. And I'm glad we haven't done it, as tempting as it's been at times, frankly, simply because we know it'd be an easy win for us to get the rankings, but we just go the harder route to make sure that, you know, we're working on reviews, working on authority, all the things that really fortify a ranking that will stand the test of time. Even if, you know, these sort of things are changed and policies are updated. Anyway, it's still frustrating to see. They are getting better. There are aspects of Google My Business that are getting better, but it's still not great. Okay, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about another update in the local SEO news sector.
SEO 101 will be back right after recess.
Are you looking for the best in WordPress speed, security, and scalability? WP Engine is a digital experience platform for WordPress, powering digital experiences for large brands around the world. With easy-to-use site management tools and powerful do-it-your-way development features, WP Engine gives you the flexibility to build it your way. Improve your SEO and conversion rates with a faster site on WP Engine. Learn more on WPEngine.com.
Here's the truth you need to know about podcasting. The biggest problem you face right now as a future podcaster is the myth that it takes an enormous amount of time or effort to produce a high-quality professional podcast. Luckily for you, there's a solution to your problem. If you're an online marketer who really needs to grow an audience of buyers but can't do all the heavy lifting alone, then here's the solution you're looking for. Introducing the DFY Podcasting System. Here's what you get. 30 minutes of one-on-one training. A weekly podcast for you or your company. Distribution to almost every podcast portal. An embeddable player for your website. An ebook called How to Podcast, created for WMR.fm show hosts. And much, much more. And best of all, you'll start seeing results with the DFY podcast system within a couple of weeks. You're just one podcast away from growing brand awareness and engagement in your business. Log on to podcast.wmr.fm and sign up for a deeply discounted rate today. That's podcast.wmr.fm.
Okay, class, take your seats and no talking. Recess is over and SEO 101 is back in session. Only on webmasterradio.fm.
Welcome back to SEO 101 on WMR.fm, hosted by myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company, Senior SEO, Scott Vanak. So Google call history is beginning to show in data in Google My Business for select businesses. We briefly spoke about this in the last show. It's essentially what's happening. I can get a little more in depth about how it works, but if you have a Google My Business listing, in some businesses in the United States are getting the opportunity to enroll in this program where if someone clicks on call on the, let's say they're using their mobile phone, they see the look list and they say call and they want to reach out to that vendor. It's getting redirected seamlessly to your account, to your phone number, your business phone number. The redirection there is there for a purpose. Google is tracking that. And there's now going to be a call history report. And these people are already seeing that within the your Google My Business reporting. And it's going to show who called when, whether it was answered, all that information. And it's really handy, especially these days. In fact, Barry Schwartz gave a good example of how his business, not everyone's working indoors right now at the office. Some are, but not all. And as a result, they're missing phone calls. But this is at least one way to look back and find out which ones they missed. It's, again, very minimal rollout, but I think it's an interesting concept. And I'm hoping it does roll out to Canada and other clients in the US that we have. It'd be interesting data to be able to watch. And I love any kind of call tracking data. We use our own call tracking system to do this kind of tracking for our clients, but it's invaluable to know what's going on and where it came from. It's also a good way to identify when it's an existing client calling you who just lazily went and typed in your business name and called you, or whether or not it's new business, which is really important when you're doing any kind of marketing. Okay, the Mueller files. Google, I love this. Old sites complain about new sites and new sites complain about old sites with rankings. It's so true. We get this all the time. I don't know. I can't even count. Sky, we get called, like when we talk to a new client, they're like, I don't understand why this goddamn website is showing up before us. We've been around 10, 15 years. We've got all this stuff going on and it just showed up out of the blue. What are we doing wrong? And how common, huh?
We see it from both sides. We've had clients who are brand new sites and 3 days in. Why am I not ranking? My site's way better than these guys who've been around for 20 years. Well, okay. Yeah. Sometimes you don't even know what to say. Okay, sure.
It's kind of painful to explain. It really is. Because to us, it seems obvious, but it isn't always. And the fact is, by itself, and Google, and John Mueller says this, age means nothing on the internet. Your domain age doesn't mean a thing by itself. Again, he's being literal here. Typically, if your website has been around a long time, you're using a domain, it's been around, but it's mainly because it's connected to a website with great content and has had excellent signals, positive signals saying that you know what you're doing, you know, you've got great shares, industry sites are talking about your website or your business, all that is going to help and you're going to build a great authority. Typically, you won't be outpaced by a brand new website unless they're doing a lot of great things and they're getting a lot of current press. And perhaps they've got a great link for something. There are ways for them to jump ahead of you. But typically, that's not the case. Oftentimes, I'm speaking, of course, from an old website's perspective, if they're seeing that they're being kicked out of the top rankings by a new one, it's because the new one's working harder. And they've just outpaced you. There are incidences, a couple that have just made me just go insane. Like I just have moments of going, God, quit, where it makes really truly makes no sense. I just don't know what Google's thinking. Why is this site ranking?
I often wonder sometimes when I see sites like that, what black hat tricks are going on behind the scenes that we don't know about, you know, because sometimes every now and then, usually things can be explained, but sometimes they can't, but there's a reason. It's not magic. And I don't know, it's just every now and then you get one of those oddball ones and it takes a lot of digging.
There's actually recently, I haven't had so many of those. I've had a couple, you know, we have a fair amount of business even during COVID, and there's been a couple in the last year, small businesses, but that we've done all of the best tactics we know that work 99% of the time, it seems anyway. And it just hasn't worked. And I don't see why. Great website, good reputation, reviews, excellent SEO. We do say so ourselves. Google My Business looks good. Still can't seem to be getting the top 10 again. It's like it's like it was penalized somehow. There's no notices of that. It's those ones drive me batty. They do keep me awake at night. I don't get it. Thankfully, those are a very, very few and far between, but I do wish there was a clear answer why. Anyway. All right. Heading one tags. This is a great one. So let's turn it one second here. It was Roger Monty. We've had Roger on the show before. He's a great guy. Anyway, he does lots of great writing on Search Engine Journal. He wrote this one, and I got a good kick out of this. Heading H1 headings, over 50% of SEOs doing it wrong? He's got pictures of SEOs like getting all righteous and looking like someone's going to have to break up a fight. And is multiple H1 tags a good idea or not? No, it's not. Yes, it is. So heading one tags are in your HTML. It's a way to structure content on your web page. So it's, well, generally there's certain styles attached to each heading. And if you have a heading one, it's usually large. It's a title. It's like a title of your page, not the title tag, but a title of the visual thing you see in the page. And then heading two is slightly smaller, different color. Heading three, it's more diminutive and so on. Some people have multiple heading ones on the page, and you should think, well, should there be multiple titles? No. That's my take on it, unless it's somehow a multiple title. I don't know. I don't even know. Like multiple versions. I don't know.
I would say having a more than one H1 on a page, typically you don't need to do that, but there are cases where you would, especially if you get into long form content. Typically you'd want two heading ones if you've got two distinct areas of content that are possibly different. You know, they can stand alone as their own. But in most cases, you probably want a whole separate page for that second block of content. So, you know, there's certainly legitimate reasons why you might want to do that. But generally speaking, you know, I would say not. One, you only need one. But again, from an SEO perspective, it doesn't really matter. No.
No, I mean, there was a time when Google would take them as hints. You know, if a heading one was there, that was sort of a suggestion that that's the title or the main content of the page. I actually don't see a reason why they, you know, even their AI algorithms would look at that. It would be kind of pointless to put any weight on it, but it helps them understand the page perhaps.
I think they do still take a little bit of a hint, because in the John Mueller quote, he does say a whole bunch of stuff and then says, but sometimes having a clear heading on a page gives us a little bit more information on what that section is about. So the value is more than zero, but how much more than zero? Probably not a lot.
Yeah. And you know what? Just think best practices. I think one of the examples here is one I would have used as well, and that is, whenever I'm doing a Word document, I always have the bookmark pane open so I can see how the page structures. I like clean. And so there's only one H1 tag, and that shows up as the title. And it's like a table of contents that appears on the left side of your screen when you're doing Word documents. And then I use a heading two for the next section, and a heading, and then threes for subsections of it. And then it all shows up beautifully within the Word document, in the table of contents. And that is just a natural way to want to read. And I think it helps clarify the structure of a page. It's a good usability feature, a comfortable way to read, all good things that you want to have on your web pages if you want your visitors to enjoy themselves. That's my opinion. It isn't the end of the world if you don't do that, but it certainly is, I think, a better product when you do. But yes, from an SEO perspective, it's not the end of the world if you don't. And a lot of people didn't realize that.
A lot more than I would have thought.
Yes, yes. All right, we have one question. Thankfully, we have it's been a little while. It's always good to have a new one. This one's from Cameron Raman. It says, I'm curious to know, has anyone noticed any significant swings in our Google organic traffic in the month of April, where the swings have established new traffic baselines? I noticed that from January through about the end of March, my site has had a high baseline of organic Google traffic. So things were good. Then sometime in April, it dropped back down to pre-2021 levels. It's really weird. So Scott and I were discussing this, and the only thing that really comes to mind that really happened in April that was significant and actually notable was the review update. So sites that were essentially review sites, talking about different products, and usually they were affiliate-based, got hit hard, really hard. Now, I don't know how hard you're talking about here. Like, did you drop a ton? Do you even have a review website? I don't know, but I would suspect that anyone who has seen a fairly significant drop in April, that's probably the reason. Is there anything else we can think of, Scott? I don't think so.
Yeah, there's not a lot that happened in April that I'm aware of that would have a big impact, aside from this product review update, which may have. But I was wondering just now while you were talking, it's sometimes hard to answer these questions because we can't ask questions back to help clarify things. But what I have to wonder is, I wonder if near the end of 2020, maybe around Christmas, he posted some kind of content, whether it be a blog, a big blog that did really well, and it got that initial boost for a few months. And then, you know, as a lot of blogs do, they get that boost in traffic and then it tapers down. And I wonder if it just naturally tapered down in April. You know, possibly I would look into that, like look into where the entry traffic is coming to in your site. Is it all, if it's to the homepage, maybe this doesn't apply, but if it is a specific piece of content, has anything changed on that content? Is it now outdated? Is it a blog post? Maybe there's something there.
Excellent point.
It's hard to say, but there could be more going on for sure.
Yeah. Okay, great. I think that's helpful, at least a little bit, Cameron. Let us know if we've missed something. We're more than happy to follow up again in the next show. Well, on behalf of myself, Ross Dunn, CEO of Stepforth Web Marketing, and my company's senior SEO, Scott Van Ack, thank you for joining us today. Remember, we have a show notes newsletter you can sign up for at SEO101radio.com, where you don't have to miss a single link, and you can refresh your memory of past shows at any time. If you have any questions you'd like to share with us, please feel free to post them on our Facebook group, easily found by searching SEO 101 Podcast on Facebook. Have a great week, and remember to tune into future episodes, which air every week on WMR.fm.
Great. Thanks, everyone.
The opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of WebmasterRadio.fm's management or sponsors. Any rebroadcast or redistribution without authorized consent of WebmasterRadio.fm is prohibited.